Good morning.
Good morning.
This is the last talk of the year, and turn it up a bit. And our as of this afternoon, we have a break until New Year's Eve. We always have a nice New Year's Eve party. It's really interesting because very few of our members come. They come and go, but mostly people who've never been here before come and go. And we have our usual formality, but it's all kind of broken up with people don't know what's going on. So it's a kind of a little circus, but it works. It's always great, as long as you don't expect anything. So I invite you all to come. It's a great way to spend New Year's Eve. Today I want to talk about my plan for the next few months. And I also want to acknowledge all of the practice, work, devotion of the members. So first I want to talk about what I'm doing. I have always enjoyed leading practice periods at Tassajara. Tassajara began at the same time as the Berkeley Zendo. We got Tassajara and we got the Berkeley Zendo same year, 67. And so I've been going to Tassajara ever since, four practice periods, and then when I was co-abbot, I was leading practice periods for 9 years. Every year, we have two practice periods at Tassajara every year, winter and spring and fall. So the abbots always lead the practice periods. That's kind of the perk or the privilege that the abbots have, is that abbots lead the practice periods. And if the abbots can't, then the former abbots can do that. And so the last practice period that I led by myself was in 2005. And then in the last couple of years, I've been co-leading with Abbot Steve Spooky. He's always invited me to do that. And so I've always said, well, you know, I can't lead a full practice period because I don't want to be there that long. So I said, if anybody wants to share some time, I'll be willing to do that. So when Steve invited me to do that with him, he didn't leave. He just wanted me to be there. So I've done that the last several years. This year, none of the abbots were able to commit to the practice period because of other various things they have to do, and except for Steve. And so we decided that Paul Haller, who was a former abbot, and Steve and myself would each do a month this coming year, this coming winter. But unfortunately, Abbot Steve discovered he had terminal pancreatic cancer, as many of you know. So he's bedridden and will not be able to do that. So that leaves Paul Haller and I to deal with February. I was going to do January. Steve was going to do February, and I was going to do, and Paul was going to do March. This is something we've never done before. Because the abbots actually like to do the whole thing themselves, as the teacher. So this leaves Paul and I to pick up that piece. So I will be at Tassajara January and half of February. Whenever I've gone to Tassajara in the past, when I used to do practice periods, 3 month practice periods every year, the Sangha just took care of itself really well. I never thought about it. When I was at Tassajara, As a matter of fact, when I go to Tassajara, I don't think about Berkeley. It doesn't. Berkeley? What's that? I'm just there. And when I'm here, I don't think about that. I don't think about Tassajara. So I have this kind of one-track mind. I just settle in where I am and I don't think about what. I remember when we moved here from Dwight Way. Dwight Way was this wonderful place that we built for 12 years before moving here. And I said, how could we ever leave this place? But we did. We bought this place for $225,000 back in the day. And is the day we left, I never thought about Dwight Way again. Anyway, so I'm going to be gone for that length of time, but we have great leadership here. We have the vice abbot who is not taking his leave of whatever you call it until I'm gone. And I mean, until I come back. So I'm sure everything will work just like it always has. So next thing is, I want to, being the end of the year, I really want to acknowledge all of the work and all of the devotion and willingness of the members to make this place work, because this place only works through the actions of through the cooperation of the members. The abbot sits up here and kind of turns around and emanates goodwill, hopefully. And then everybody else does all the work. of course, Suzuki Roshi asked me to take care of, you know, find a place and do something, and but he didn't tell me what to do. And he wanted to see what we would do. The three places, Genjoji in Sonoma, with Bill Kwong, and Liz Kay and Haiku Zendo. And he just said, you know, do something. So we did. And I organized this. Well, first of all, you know, when somebody initiates a practice somewhere, usually that person does all the work. So, you know, I did the cooking, I did the cleaning, I did the arrangements, I did cut the lawn, and created a farm in the backyard. And little by little, other people came, the members came, and they started taking on various tasks. So my the way I felt that the place would work was kind of like following the Tassajara model, a kind of combination of a monastic schedule with a rural or city reality of how people could join in the continuous Gyoji meaning continuous practice of everyday zazen, and little by little finding our way with the formal practice and the so-called informal way of our lives. And but it's worked for 49 years. Is it 48 years? 49, yeah. 67 to
46.
46? Yeah. Something like that. Anyway, long time. 47
next year.
Okay, 47. Yeah, next year, 47. So, it's always worked. We've never had big financial problem. We've had financial difficulties, you know, everything is, nothing smooth, but pretty smooth. That's because I don't know anything about money or finance. If I knew anything about money or finance, it never would have worked. True. Anytime somebody that knew something about money or finance took over, in some then we had a problem. So if you look at it from that point of view, you know, you say, oh my God, how can this work? But if you just forget about it, it works. So anyway, it's always worked. And so I'm very careful to, I'm a kind of cheapskate, so that's one way, one reason why it always works. And we never nickeled and dimed people for money. Only when we needed something did we ask for something. And it's always been, people have always generously offered. So it kind of works like that. So I want to talk about how this place actually works. This is the chart that shows what everybody does, everybody's position. So I always want, the way I organized, the way we organized the practice is that there are a lot of positions to, and the positions is what keeps everything going in the circle of practice. So there's a board of directors. There are the abbot, the vice abbot, the president, the vice president, the treasurer, and members at, six members at large, plus the recording secretary. Then there's the practice committee. There's the abbot, the vice abbot, the coordinator, the assistant coordinator, the tenzo, the zendo manager, the office manager, the Saturday director, the head resident, the work leader, the session director, and members at large. Three. Then, and there's the finance committee of seven people. There's a development committee of seven people. There's the class coordinator, called the communicator. Then there's the ethics and reconciliation committee of six people. There's the project management of seven people. There's the 15 active practice leaders. There are 10 residents. There's the office manager. Then there is the maintenance person, the kitchen keeper, the head gardener, the dokusan hut person, who takes care of cleaning and so forth, the memorial garden person, the memorial garden altars, the art coordinator, the bathroom attendant, the community room, the community room altar, the community room porch, the bookstore, the health and safety manager, the sangha support person, the family practice, the shika, the men's shelter, dinner, which we serve twice a month, I think it is, the abbot's assistant, the webmaster, the audio archivist, the accounting consultant, the head doan, the assistant zendo manager, the zendo manager, the head jikido, the head shiden, the assistant to the head shiden, the head server, the head dishwasher, the sewing teacher, the class coordinator, the Wednesday night group, the half-day sittings, the administration assistant, temple assistant, the mountains and rivers coordinator, the Saturday lecture scheduler, the Oryoki instructor, the Oryoki builder, so to speak, the newsletter editor, the newsletter distribution, the librarian, the Zazen instructor coordinator, the special events coordinator, and the IT manager. the IT manager, which has to do with the computers breaking down. Yes?
Don't forget your sewing teacher.
I did say that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
it. I said that, yes. I know, the list went down fast, but I did say sewing teacher. So all this, you know, we want to give everybody something to do. When we plug somebody into doing something, just taking care of an altar, you know, I can't do much because I'm busy. Just take care of an altar. Just, you know, there's so many components to making this practice work. It probably would work with none of that, but it wouldn't be the same. Because once we take on a part of the piece of the practice, then we are connected to everything, and we practice from the point of view or the placement of our position. So the placement of our position means that if I'm the bathroom attendant, I make sure that there's toilet paper, and I make sure that the toilet's always clean and the bathroom swept and all that. And but I can see the whole practice from the point of view of that position. And I'm contributing to the way the whole thing works. If you take one piece out, there has to be an adjustment to make everything work. So when I do a practice period of Tassajara, my first talk often was about the vertical and the horizontal. And on the vertical level, everybody's the same. Everything is equal. The bathroom attendant is equal to the abbot. Everyone is on, no matter what, whether a small, small position or a large position, everybody's the same. That's equality. On the vertical level, the hierarchical level, everyone is in a different place. So the abbot has his duties. The bathroom attendant has their duties. So you can't compare one with, you can compare if you want, but comparison means value. Which is the most valuable? Is it the most valuable to be the abbot, or is it most valuable to be the bathroom attendant? That's comparative value. But the virtue of each position is exactly the same. So, at Tassajara, when we have a practice period, the shuso, or the head student, is the garbage man. That's in order for people to understand that each position has its virtue and is incomparable to any other position. That's the prized position, is being the garbage person, or being the person who does the compost. Before we had a big compost barn, it was the it was cleaning the toilets. So the shuso cleans the toilets. That's the prized position. The fastest way to rise in hierarchy in Zen is to not want to be up there. To just take care of what's down here. Just taking care of what's down here without worrying about what's up there gets you up there faster. As long as you want to be up there, it won't work. How come they never promote me? It's very difficult because everybody wants to be promoted, you know. We can't say, not everybody, but mostly we all want to be promoted. Where is it going, right? Where is that practice going? That's usual. In a worldly way, there's progress. But in Zen, there's not that kind of progress. There's progress, but that's not what progress is. Progress is in letting go rather than accumulating. Building up our sense of self and our ego is frowned upon. The purpose of practice is to help everybody let go, to help everybody be themselves without being driven by their ego. We talk about, sometimes someone will say, when they're a little overbearing, they say, oh, it's the coffee talking, right? Or, oh, it's the wine talking. Actually, it's the ego's talking. we have this kind of problem. Oh, I think that would be good if someone said that. You know. Oh, I'm sorry, it's just the ego talking. I can't help it. That would be very good. Because then you'd see, you know, where you are. But we all have our ego talk. You know, our ego want, our ego talk. I remember Suzuki Roshi beating up Phil Wilson, you know, with his stick. He said, ego, ego, ego. So, we have a lot of people who have been here for a long time and been through all these positions, been through all the positions in life. Work leader, zendo manager, sesshin director, you know, all this, tenzo. And then what do? When you've been through all the positions, we change the positions every year or 2 years, depending on the position. Rotating the positions is our practice. What do when you've done all the positions? Well, start again at the beginning. That's hard. True, big practice is once you've been up there, you think that's up there. You start again cleaning the toilet. And then sometimes we think, well, I've done all that, so there's nothing more for me to do. I think we have to let go of that kind of idea. And just, you know, when we were practicing at Tassajara, every beginning of every practice period, people would find out what their positions were. We'd read up the positions. Nobody knew what they were going to be. And whatever hand was dealt is the hand that we had to deal with. So that's really great practice. Whatever hand we're dealt is the one we have to deal with. We can't escape. We can't change it. We can't do something else. This is it. And this is Zen practice. Every one of us is dealt a hand in our life. And we can change, you know, but there's certain things that we can't change. And we just have to deal with those. And dealing with the things that we can't change is our practice. I remember Suzuki Roshi saying, the problem you have now is the problem you will always have. Weak people, or a weak person will always be a weak person, a strong person will always be a strong person. Now, a weak person wants to be a strong person, but a strong person doesn't want to be a weak person. But actually, being a weak person is being a strong person. And sometimes being a strong person is being a weak person. Nishiari Bokusan, in his commentary, on Genjo Koan, said, I'm a very powerful person. When the wind blows, I fall down. That's a great statement. Nowadays, you know, people say, would you like to do this? Would you please like to do that? What would you like to do? That's not Zen. That's just ordinary catering to people's desires. Sometimes we'll ask for volunteers. Would somebody like to be a volunteer to do this or that? And I see this happening at Tassajara too. I don't like it. don't ask for volunteers. Because who wants to be a volunteer? If you say, okay, then, oh, well, there's this ego, right? And if you don't want to do it, that's your ego, too. So please do this. If you, when you address somebody and ask them to do something, more likely they will say, gee, they think I'm capable. Somebody likes me, so they asked me to do something. That's much more, you know, workable. And even if you don't want to do it, you say, yes. And you do it. That's real practice. But in our practice, because people live at home, they have families, it's not a monastery. So we have to be more, much more accommodating to people's situations. But still, we have to be careful and weigh things in the balance. This kind of practice, you know, we have to weigh everything in the balance. And so we have to be very sensitive to everybody's practice. When we ask people to do something, we have to be very sensitive to where everybody is in their life. So, but that's good, because it sensitizes us to each other. Instead of just ordering people around, you can get into where you're just ordering people around. That's the downside of just asking people to do something and expecting them to say yes. The upside is that often we can do more than we think. When I was with my teacher, he always gently pushed us to our limit. Pretty amazing, actually. He was never forceful, but his gentleness was so forceful that he didn't push us around, but he pushed us farther than we thought we could go. This is my gratitude to my teacher, is he always pushed me further than I thought I could go. He always brought out something in me that I never thought I had. Or that a place I never thought I would could possibly go.
Would you be so kind as to share one example
of
where your teacher encouraged you into a place that you didn't think that you could go?
Well, you know, when I he wants to know how my teacher did that, so he wants an example. Mostly in Zazen, because in Zazen, we're not supposed to move. But even though we're not supposed to move, we still move, right? I mean, and he would say, even though I say don't move, it doesn't mean you shouldn't move. Nevertheless, he would say, in the middle of, said, don't chicken out. He liked to use that was his colloquial borrowing. And so he just encouraged me to, even though I thought I could not do this, encouraged me to go beyond what I thought I could do. So, until I could actually break through my conditioning. So our conditioning is really holds us back. And when we sit Zazen, we let go of our conditioning. Because our conditioning is what causes our problems, not Zazen. We say, oh, Zazen's causing me this problem. But it's not Zazen that's causing you the problem, it's the conditioning that's causing the problem. So he encouraged me beyond my conditioning. And also to to see one thing through to the end. So, when I think about what makes a practice place work, what makes a practice place work in a real good way, I mean, in a workable way is that somebody is totally dedicated to making that happen, unwaveringly. So things may be up, things may be down, things may be good, things may be bad, things may be right, things may be wrong, but always there, always right in the middle, and not being pushed around by any of that. That's what I got from my teacher. So, do you have any questions? So, if you have this kind of attitude, then you can always find yourself, no matter what is happening in your life. You always know where you are in every circumstance. And you don't get lost. And even if you do get lost, you get found. Even though we get pushed around this way and pushed around that way, and everything's, you know, things are pulling us this way and things are pulling us that way, you're always there. Suzuki Roshi didn't go anywhere. He just came to San Francisco and discovered that there were people that wanted to do what he was doing. And he devoted himself to letting that happen. And he didn't go anywhere. He just stayed there. And he just did the same thing every day. And I was so impressed with that, because I never wanted to repeat the same thing more than once, more than twice. And every day he did this continuous practice. Practice just was his life. So practice can be our life. Doesn't mean that we have to sit zazen in the zendo every day, but there's the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And the Sangha life is what keeps everything together. Sangha life is for us, he said the most important part of that is Sangha, that we encourage each other. And, you know, there are two kinds of Zen. One is adept Zen, and the other is called religion, mercy Zen. Adept Zen is what we read about in books a lot. When, which is spiritual virtuosos, which is for an elite kind of capable person, kind of like basketball players, you know, or football players, people who can, bicycle racers, people who really can train and train and train and do some outstanding things. But religious Zen is for everybody. You don't have to be any special kind of person to practice. You don't have to have any ability at all. You don't have to be smart, or you don't have to be capable. It's sometimes called mercy Zen, although I don't like that so much. It's practice for everybody. I remember Suzuki Roshi talking about the adept, you know, can really draw a straight line. But a child just goes, you know, any kind of line is okay and it's beautiful. So we have a kind of standard for beauty, but actually, in reality, everything is beautiful. Everybody has some beauty. If we, to be able to see the beauty in every person, has nothing to do with, it has to do with, that's what we call virtue. When we compare, this one is beautiful, that one is ugly, that's value. This one is more valuable than that one because they have this and this one has that. But we're all the same.
Thank you. If you're introducing someone new to practice,
yes.
What kind of, I want to say leeway, do you offer them because you know that they're not yet confident and you don't want to scare them off?
Oh, well, first of all, we show them how to sit zazen. And I always say, you should take the easiest posture. You should not try to sit in the full lotus. I show them all the positions. This is the full lotus. This is the half lotus. This is the quarter lotus. This is the what do you call it? Burmese position. This is seiza. I've actually tried to get them to first cross their legs some way. This is campfire style, cowboy style. You know, you just sit with your ankles crossed around the campfire. But you should sit in any way that you can. You shouldn't try to push yourself.
Including a chair?
Yeah, you can sit in a chair. Yeah, of course. Yes, you can sit. But I don't offer that first. I don't say, well, you can, because although, you know, we don't want to hurt people. Try crossing your legs. First, try crossing your leg. You don't start with the easiest, with the default. You start with the practice, and then you can revert. You can lie down, you know. So that there's no special way to sit, except that the most comfortable way to sit, believe it or not, is in full lotus with your back straight. That's why we sit that way. It's the most comfortable way. But you don't know that until you've done it for a while. But you have to find your own comfort. You have to find your own position. It takes, you know, Suzuki Roshi used to say, oh, it takes about 6 months before you find your, but it could take a year or a couple of years or 10 years before you actually find your posture. So the thing is that it's never comfortable in the beginning. So, but, you know, little by little, you practice little by little, a little bit at a time, without trying to push yourself, so that you ease into the practice. So, yeah, that's, you know, I remember back in the 70s, and one of the teachers in the East used to make all of his students sit with full lotus. And they all left, and they all had broken ankles and stuff, you know. So they all hurt themselves because he forced them to do that. Nobody forced me to sit in full lotus, but I wanted to do it, so I did it after 6 months. I thought I'd been practicing for a long time. After 6 months, I thought, geez, I've been doing this for a long time. Now I see people that have been practicing for 20 years, and I think, well, you've been practicing for a while. But little by little, just it's always little by little. We don't jump off the ton when zazen's over. We should, you know, we take care of our body. Take care of your body. Ease into, when you sit down, you know, you should do this, you know, so that you're stretching your body and exercising your stretching. stretching should be done constantly. It's not something you do once in a while. You're doing it all the time. If you're practicing, you're stretching all the time. As you get older, the body implodes. When you're younger, you know, you're jumping, right? And when you get older, you're settling. So we tend to implode. And then you look at people and you say, oh, you're getting smaller, you know? Which happens. So you have to keep making effort to keep stretching out and being loose. Being loose. Stretching and being loose is the secret of life. People say, oh yeah, I stretch. When do you do that? Oh, once in a while. I do this. Sometimes. That's not it. You know, it has to be part of your life. It can't just be something extra. It has to be your something that you do as part of your life. Zazen has to be something that you do as part of your life. It can't just be something extra. In order to actually do it, it has to be fitted into your life. Just like, you know, you get up in the morning, go to the bathroom. Get up in the morning, go to the bathroom, sit zazen. That's number three. One is getting up, two is going to the bathroom, three is sitting zazen. And then, you know, do whatever you want all day long. So it's really, fortunately, you know, we've developed this place so that people could come and sit zazen together and to practice together and to learn what the Dharma is. So it's good to take advantage of that while you can. So if I don't see you on New Year's Eve, I have a nice little break and see you next year for a while. I'll be here until the first week of January.